future.
I think it's
whoa, 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 whoa. I mean, to be honest with you, Chris, this is a safe space. You can tell us. So you don't have to hold back. Don't feel like you've got to hold back. If you know something, we're here.
Oh, yeah, so we're going to sign this.
He's one of those people where the game in his mind would slow down so he could take everything in and analyze everything a lot quicker than the average footballer does. Players of that quality just have this God-given gift. Hello, Happy New Year, and welcome to episode 19 of the Same Old Wombles. Rest in peace to Pele. The Same Old Wombles is brought to you by some of us responsible for putting together Yellow and Blue back in the day. We're non-affiliated, non-partisan, just the Same Old Wombles. My name is Mark Lewis, and as a fine man once said, the love I have for my football club is infinite. Tonight's panel features Adam Proctor, Niall Cooper, hopefully joining us later, Matthew Cooper, and our special guest for the new year, Chris Thorpe, the AFC Wimbledon content exec. Welcome to Chris. On tonight's show, we're doing a little review of the Christmas and New Year game, or three. We're going to interview Chris about all things being content exec and exactly how much fun that really is or isn't. What our hopes and fears are for the transfer window and for 2023 as the rest of the season unfolds. And of course, we'll have some numbers, just because it wouldn't be Same Old Wombles without any numbers. Welcome to episode 19.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to
You have to do the whole song, mate. You can't just do 19. Chris probably never heard it.
What was the average age of the combat soldier in Vietnam, Chris?
I have no idea. I guess 18.
No, you failed the numbers quiz even worse than Adam does every week. 19, he's just singing it. 19. It's a classic song. You have to search it on the internet. Is right
when up
there.
When he says classic, 1985, right. Chris, you were like minus 15.
Minus 10.
There you go.
Yeah.
I think I remember seeing it on Blue Peter. That's where I think I first saw it, actually.
I can't believe it's in Blue Peter.
I think so. Yeah, I'm going to dig out a link to the YouTube, definitely. I'm sure it was. So I think they were talking about something about the synthesizer or the sampling or something.
It was one of the first examples of a sampled record. Basically, some club DJ called Paul Hardcastle that no one had ever heard of before or since. Heard this on a documentary somewhere. That
in World War II, the average age of the combat soldier was 26. In Vietnam, he was 19. 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 19.
The heaviest fighting of the past 2 weeks continued today, 25 miles northwest of Saigon.
I wasn't really sure what was going on.
Anyway, here's a football podcast. So here's a question for all of you, and jump in first if you want it, Chris. Are we happy or disappointed by a loss at Plymouth, a sort of loss at Plymouth, a loss at Sutton, a draw, a bore draw against Newport, and a win at Colchester, smash and grab? That was our Christmas New Year stuff. How do we feel about 4 points out of a possible 9?
It's par, isn't it? I think maybe a little bit below par slightly. Losing to Sutton has now become painful, and I've now like kind of disliked places slightly further out into Surrey than I previously had. So that's where I'm going with the Sutton one. Obviously, Newport draw. That's got ref. This is me. I am now no longer part of the Donstruss board, and for Adam and Mark, it means I can now say more things than I ever should. Their referee is complete and utter. Of the highest order. And that is exactly why we didn't get anything out of that game. It's just shocking, absolutely shocking. And so that should really be counted as 3 points anyway. And as for Plymouth, that was a Mickey Mouse trophy, as we've talked about on this podcast many times. And nobody really likes pizza anyway. I'm a lasagna person. And until they introduce the lasagna cup, I will have nothing to do with it.
Well, having just come down with a bout of food poisoning that seems to have come from a pizza, I won't say where, because that would be maybe unfair. I also agree.
John's.
the new Newport, the referee, oh my word. Unbelievable. Like, it was just ridiculous. I don't understand. It'd be good to know more about what happens to, you know, refs after these kind of terrible, terrible games. It was just shocking. But yeah, and in terms of like the other games, I'm happy, you know.
Adam, it's really obvious what happens to referees like that. They all get taken to Pizza John's, Papa John's. That's what happens. They all go there and get food poisoning. So that's undoubtedly what's happened in this one. We'll talk about a Plymouth game. Matt's joined.
Aloha. The Plymouth game.
Papa John's.
Oh, okay. Was that some bad refereeing too? That one I didn't see. The Newport one, I'm still furious about.
No, that's the ref I was referring to, so you can carry on.
What's the point? What's the point of having a red card rescinded? You know, do we get 2 points? Can they give us 2 points? And if you get enough red cards rescinded, do you actually get more points? I feel that needs to be the way that it works. How many red cards have we had rescinded this year, season? Three! We should get points. We should get points for all these rescinded red cards. No, you work for Fair Games. Sort it out. Come on, get on to people.
I'll put it down in the next manifesto of Fair Games. Same, like global things. It's all about fair play, fair game. Therefore, extra. I think 3 points is not enough. 10 points for every red card rescinded, particularly if your club name happens to be AFC Wimbledon. Then maybe it should be more. That's what we want, yeah? It's a fair game. Chief executive, spokesperson says, more points for AFC Wimbledon. That's fair.
No, genuinely, though, isn't it a thing? It should be a thing. If there are a certain number of rescinded red cards, you should get points.
I mean, if your club name's AFC Wimbledon.
We should have beaten Newport. We would have beaten Newport with the same number of people on the pitch. And we didn't. Mark? You agree with me. You've got your hand up. I see that. We can start a petition.
No, I was just going to tell you that two amusing things that happened at the Newport game. So Niall will appreciate this because it's a Don's Trust board thing. So I had the honour, dubious honour perhaps, of being one of the reps in the Don's Trust board sitting with the away directors. And Niall knows some of the guys from Newport and they're all genuine, proper salt the earth football fans that, you know, it wouldn't matter what team they were supporting. And Niall is the chairman as well, and he's a really decent bloke, and we had a good chat, and he follows them all around the country and everything else. And the red card, he wasn't sure. None of us were sure, but we were obviously shouting because it happened directly below us. And then I was in the middle of messaging you lot about the red card and about the fact that I wasn't sure whether it should have been. So I genuinely didn't see the penalty. And I looked straight across to Gavin, the guy whose name is the Newport chairman. And the first thing he said is, he mouthed to me is, I don't think that's a penalty. So I thought, okay, well, if the opposition chairman's saying that, it's clearly not a penalty. Didn't see any of it at the time. What I do like, and he can jump in and comment on it himself, because I follow Chris on Chris Thorpe on Twitter. And Chris managed to put the best, I can't really describe what it was, but it was basically the most obvious way of saying this is a completely, insert swear word you want, bad decision by the referee without actually physically saying those words on his own Twitter feed. So obviously he wasn't going to get himself in trouble as the content exec or anything else, or as an official AFC Women representative, but he was still going to leave everyone under no illusions as to how utterly ridiculously bad that decision was.
Yeah, it was... It was an interesting decision, I'll just say that. And writing the match report, it was hard not to give my own opinion on the decision itself. So, yeah, I kind of had to bite my tongue on that one. With the red card, I felt at the time, from where I saw it in the press box, sort of almost above our dugout, I felt like Kyle never actually moved his head towards the opponent, and obviously that proved to be true with, you know, the video evidence and also with it being overturned. So yeah, I think justice done, but at the same time, those two decisions completely changed the game, and we could have easily been sitting here talking about another home victory, which unfortunately we're not.
While we were just talking, I was just thinking about your red card rescinded thing, Matt. What I think we should do is, if you have a red card rescinded, the next game you should be able to play with 12 players. That's got to be the way forward, isn't it? Because that's the only way of making it up.
I think you should get a point. You should get a point. If your red card is rescinded, the team who gets a red card rescinded should get at least a point.
I think that would be
only fair.
What about an extra goalkeeper? Two goalkeepers.
What's that like?
You could have 12 players, two goalkeepers.
And Mark, when you were talking about the Newport chairman and everything there, all I kept hearing was liar, liar, cheat, cheat. It's really weird. I couldn't get those words out of my head.
Gavin is lovely. Gavin Fox, I know him really well.
Anyway, moving things swiftly along.
So, Chris, you mentioned about the fact that video evidence was used to overturn the red card against Holt. And I've said on this podcast before, I'm a massive fan of the alternative angle stuff that's being produced, obviously. I think it's fantastic. I love it every time watching it. And the different one, you know, you've got some new ones as well more recently. I did wonder whether the bench cam came into play at all with that, because that would have been a pretty good angle, obviously, for that game.
I don't know how much I can say, but I'll just say I assisted with the appeal.
Cool. So I guess, I mean, in terms of appeals, I mean, I guess they've got CCTV around the ground, which I've never really noticed. I guess they use all those to review the game, and I guess the iFollow camera, but there's only one camera for iFollow, as far as I understand it. There's no other. But do the team or the club have access to extra cameras for performance-related reviews?
Yeah, so obviously you've got the iFollow camera angle, and then you've got our analyst, Tom Dawes, who's up in the TV gantry as well. So I haven't seen his footage of it, so I don't know. But, you know, you speak about the bench cam, you're not going to get a better angle than that, because the incident took place right in front of the bench. So, yeah, make of that what you will.
I've got to just credit Chris a lot with this. And I think sometimes that in other places don't give enough credit to our comms team. But the idea of like the bench cam, the alternative angle, all these other new video angles, right? It's come through from Chris brainstorming with the comms team and looking to try and do as many different things as possible. And I've got the utmost respect for the stuff, the content they put out. You know, you're never going to be 100% perfect, but I think some of the stuff we've done this year has really moved us on. So, you know, I've got a hell of a lot of respect for that. I mean, even if it does mean that Kyle did get his red card rescinded and it means that he's now available, and some of us might think that that's a bad thing, but yeah, just in his own form. But there you go. I mean, Kyle's obviously a confidence player, so he's a confidence striker, and you know, that's for those who've listened to this podcast for a while will just know where I'm at. And I shut up Mark, because he's already going, oh no, I was rabbiting on for too much already.
Nothing changes there. I was just going to throw in to coin a phrase from another podcast, an unpopular opinion. Having watched the whole of the Colchester game on iFollow with my daughter, and then seeing the old smash and grab thing after we should, frankly, have been 2-0 down. My unpopular opinion is actually that the 3 points we gained at Colchester, unfortunately, we didn't give away, obviously, because it sounds like Sutton were the better team from minute one to minute 93 or whatever. But I don't think we deserve to beat Colchester, and maybe we ended up, you know, with the Sutton game being the comeuppance for that. But I didn't see any of it. I went for a walk on Wimbledon Common, got so lost, I ended up at Richardson Evans, where we used to train. That's how lost I got on Wimbledon Common. But that was a much better way of spending the afternoon, I think, than going to Gander Green Lane, by the sound of it.
I like the idea that football results are based on karma. I think that you know, I really hope that is true. That's how football works. So, you know.
On that, Matt, how come the town in Buckingham still exists?
It's a slow. You know.
Karma's very slow up there.
Karma,
is it?
Karma's a slow burner.
Karma chameleon. Is that what you're saying, Matt?
Talking of karma on that one, there's a journalist from that town of Buckinghamshire who's put two pictures side by side of the number of fans they took to Plymouth last year, and the number of times, Chris has seen this picture as well, the number of fans they took to Plymouth yesterday. And this has been put by a journalist from Milton Keynes. And it's hilarious because obviously last year they were pushing promotion wise or whatever, and they took thousands and thousands. This year they took about, I don't know, 76 by the sound of it.
Mark, I don't think they ever took thousands. I don't think thousands would be the word that they ever took anywhere. I think tens, maybe 100, but they never had thousands.
Fair enough. Okay, moving this rabble on, and this is probably a good place to actually start things, talking to Chris and firing questions at Chris. Yesterday was one of those games. The last Sutton game, as we've discussed at length on the pod, and we don't need to revisit that, was a black spot on and off the pitch. I don't know whether yesterday was quite so bad, but certainly it sounded like everybody had a bad day at the office. And so I was going to ask, this is one of the first things I wanted to ask you anyway, how do you get a productive answer as a fan that genuinely, I'm sure because you're a good guy and you're a fan, is going to be seething because we've just lost any game, but we've also lost to Sutton, of all people. How do you get a productive answer and manage to keep your cool when you're talking to someone like JJ after a game like that, when you want to get something which is printable and broadcastable?
I think I sort of try to take the emotion out of what I'm thinking, because at the end of the day, I see these guys working on the training ground and putting all the hours that they put in to their preparation. You know, a lot of preparation goes in for just one game, and they've just had 3 in 7 days. And after the run we've been on, I couldn't help but feel, I just felt a little bit disappointed. I just didn't feel really angry like I have been after some defeats in the past. I think I get a lot of feeling out when writing the match report. And then after that, I've got a little bit of time in between when Johnny's doing his press to think about what I'm going to ask him. And, you know, that's when a little bit of my fan head will come in and think, oh, you know, I was missing. And, you know, as we mentioned before we came on air, a lot of people were asking where he was. He was ill. So that's obviously a key thing I need to ask him about. And then I'll think about our bits in the game, you know, maybe the fixture schedule, you know, went towards us not getting the result we wanted, and ask him about that. And then, you know, also obviously the January transfer window, you know, you look at the bench, we didn't have too many attacking options. And Johnny said it himself, not just to the official site, but to the press, that, you know, we need more forward options, especially if we want to, you know, achieve what we're setting out to achieve this season in League Two. So, yeah, I just try to take the emotion out of it. At the end of the day, I've been doing it 10 months now. Maybe at the start, I was maybe getting a bit over emotional. And plus, you know, obviously things didn't go too well last season, which didn't help. And also, I think that can bring everyone's mood down when things aren't going too well. I wasn't too angry yesterday. Just wanted to ask the key questions that most fans wanted to know, I guess.
And also, fair play to you again. I saw a little exchange that happened on Facebook, because as we know, people who are not there, people who don't know, people who just surmise, were already asking questions relating to Ayoub. And then you were polite/stupid enough to go on there and basically point out exactly what was going on, that there would be an explanation for it. I know Noel's done that type of thing before as well. Matt's decided not to do it, which I completely agree with and understand. I've tried to do it occasionally as well. Sometimes it's a complete and utter nightmare. This is what I was going to ask, because we're all fans. We've all been fans for a long time. Doesn't matter whether you've been a fan for 5 minutes or 5 years or 4 years, or in my case. You're going to get understandably frustrated as a fan. How do you separate being a fan from actually being a content exec who is a member, who is a employee of the club? And where do you sort of leave the fan? How do you leave the fan at the door, I guess?
I think it starts literally from the first few days that you're at the training ground and being close to the players and getting to know them. You kind of lose the, you know, the awe factor of, oh, wow, like that. I've watched these guys week in, week out, and I love watching them play and stuff like that. You know, in the past, like, I've even had like one player say to me, "Oh, you know, who's your favorite player?" I was like, "Well, I don't have one. I can't have one. You know, it's not." maybe when I was a fan, I have one, but I don't have one now. And you know, you get to know these guys. A lot of them are around my age or younger, and I just have a good relationship with most of them. To be honest, if it, you know, all of them, I just think, yeah, you just grow out of feeling just like a fan. And also when you wanted to do what I'm doing, as long as I have, you kind of know that you don't want to, you know, mess it up, for want of a better phrase. So, you know, you take pointers from people who've been working in the industry a lot longer, and you understand how you should act and how you should carry yourself. And you also got to understand, you know, you're representing the club. It's not just representing the club to other Wimbledon fans, it's representing the club to the whole of English football, and even our fans abroad and stuff like that. And if we want to grow as a professional organization, we need to put ourselves across in the right light at all times, whether that's if we're organizing an interview with Sky and Johnny, if that's we're at a community event. You know, you want to put your right foot forward and give Wimbledon the best sort of representation possible. So I think, yeah, professionalism, you know, not always at all times, because you know, sometimes you can be a bit too serious and you don't want to be a bit too serious. You know, that's why you'll see with the social media output, I try to add a little bit of fun element, not overstep the mark, but I try and keep it fun. So yeah, it's just a learning process. And as I say, 10 months in now, I feel like I can, you know how to approach every situation, really.
One thing for me, Chris, is about, what kind of support do you need from fans? Because sometimes you're going to get flack, which isn't due, which isn't fair, or whatever reason. You know, you can't be perfect all the time. And you're also one of the people that is a known face. So, you know, people will come and say, and have a go at you for things that aren't actually anything to do with you, like the performance on the pitch. What do you need from people like us on Same Old Wombles, and from some of our listeners, to make your life a little bit easier? Because that's going to take a toll. And I think a lot of people don't realise how much of a toll it can take, the flack that you get. And I personally don't think it's necessarily, well, I don't think it's fair, but you know, what sort of thing would be beneficial to you and the rest of the comms team? Because I don't think people really realise how much work and effort goes in on a day. And that just worries me, because it's like, it's your mental well-being as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, with regards to people coming up and having a go at me, they can do if they want. But I think, you know, if they actually know me, they'll know that I can have a conversation with them, and whatever they want to say, they can just say it to me normally. You know, you don't have to put anger into everything. You know, I've had people walk past the press box when I've been writing the report and, you know, we've not played well, and he'll say, "Oh, you need to write that he played like badly," or "you need to just be honest." And it's like, well, yeah, I can be honest, but I have to be balanced, and I have to protect the players and protect the manager at the same time. That is part of my job. In a way, how can fans help me? I'd just say, yeah, just realize, like, I'm human. The rest of the media team are human. Most of us are Wimbledon fans. We all want the best for the team, as well as every other fan that supports Wimbledon. And yeah, it's just like any other job. I know it's a bit different. You're a bit more in the public eye because you work in football, but at the end of the day, we still need our time off. We still need our time when we need to be on the ball and focused. And, you know, I don't want anyone, you know, the thing with the Sal thing yesterday, I didn't want anyone to think that we would be deliberately holding back any information. You know, I tried to say it in those Facebook comments that, you know, there's a match going on. There's 11 other players on the pitch, as well as the ones on the bench. You know, our whole focus as a football club isn't based around any one player that's missing from the squad, you know? So, yeah, it's just, it can get frustrating sometimes. It's a lot of work. It is a lot of work, a lot of long hours. But at the end of the day, if you can't put up with that, you shouldn't be in the job. And you know, I can put up with that, and I am admittedly a workaholic. I probably work too much, And yeah, I've just tried to make our social media as good as it can be. It's grown a lot in terms of numbers, which is obviously great. We're going to do even more brilliant things in this year. So yeah, to be honest, I don't really get too much flack. So maybe I'm the wrong person to ask, but yeah, if people aren't happy, all I'm saying is just have a normal conversation with me. That's it.
Chris, you do a great job. And the other thing I think is great is that we get the stuff out from JJ and apply it, like, you know, within an hour of the game finishing. And I think people really appreciate that. They really appreciate hearing. People don't understand how much you appreciate hearing from a manager and a player. I think JJ's quite honest in what he says, which is really good. And that does help. That sort of like calms the mood if we've done badly. And as you know, we all get, football's a very passionate game, and it takes a long time for you to calm down, particularly if you've had a bad result. You know, I've just getting over Newport, but you need to take a breath. People need to take a breath, don't they? You know, like, you know, don't react straight away and let it settle in and realise, you know, the bigger picture. I think it was much more difficult when we were on a bad run, but now it's easier when you're not doing so badly. And I think that's what's made the Sutton game less, you know, I haven't felt the same sort of anger this time around. Like I said, maybe it's because I'm still processing the Newport game. But Chris, you're doing a great job, mate, getting stuff out there quickly.
Chris, I thought you were going to say like and subscribe and point to the top of the corner when it's what can fans do, but you didn't do that, so that's fine. But no, I was going to say that it's interesting what you said about the Asal thing, actually, because I had thought about it and thought, why haven't they said anything about why he isn't on the bench? But then, of course, as you've just said, if we were to say something about everyone who's not on the bench, well, you'd have to say something about everyone who's not on the bench, wouldn't you? Because otherwise you'd look like the club is favouring someone, because obviously he's a majority fan's favourite, etc. So that's a really useful insight. I guess the other follow-up thing I wanted to ask was, obviously you are a fan and you've talked about the professionalism and how you approach that for the interviews and the press reports and stuff, and you try and make sure it's balanced and all those kind of things. But as a fan working for the club, which is kind of the thing we really like, we want, etc., what do you think you bring being a fan rather than not being a fan from the get-go? Do you know what I mean? I know lots of people that come to join us become fans, but what do you feel that you bring as a fan?
I think, you know, not just from the media side, but say if there's a big decision that's being made on tickets or something relating to fans, like, Chris, what do you think of this bit of merchandise? I'll give my opinion and I'll say, oh, well, that colour's nothing to do with Wimbledon. I don't think it should be like that. Can we change it? Or, you know, when we put out the social media guidelines, was it the start of this season, I believe? Those were going out, and there were a few things in there where I said, oh, I think you should change that because the wording is not quite right. That's the former program editor coming out in me there. I just feel like I can, you know, not everyone who works for the club supports Wimbledon, obviously. So I just think I can just add a perspective, kind of like a voice for the fans in a way, but also one that doesn't go too much against my colleagues that I work with, you know? That makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think it totally makes sense. I think the way that when I often refer to that kind of thing is like institutional memory, you know, and actually you've got a memory that sort of is further than being in the institute in that sense. So yeah, that's cool.
By the fans, for the fans, as someone once said. So, random question, but I've always wondered this. Obviously, as a fan, as we said before, there are going to be situations, and we obviously signed a few people over the summer, the likes of Gunter and Pierce and so on, and NYC. And some of those were trailed on mostly South London Press, but other media outlets are available as well. But sometimes things just come in and we don't see them on media or anywhere else. But you're going to know about them 24 hours, maybe 48 hours in advance. So how do you manage? I mean, obviously, it's just natural curiosity, but your mates are going to be asking you. They're going to be asking you over the next 28 and a half days, I'm sure. You know, and as I said to Danny, I think, when we had Danny on the pod for an interview a few weeks ago, it would be lovely to sign someone before 11:30 on the 31st of January. So how do you manage not to tell your mates when you know that there's stuff going on and there's going to be something released in the near future?
Whoa. I mean, to be honest with you, Chris, this is a safe space. You can tell us. So you don't have to hold back. Don't feel like you've got to hold back. If you know something, we're here.
Oh, yeah, so we're going to sign this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy.
That's exactly it. It's like a therapy group.
Little
therapy group with just, you know, whatever. You can tell us anything you like, Chris. So, Messi?
I mean, he's definitely on the list, isn't he? No, it's it is hard sometimes, but at the end of the day, you know, you'll have seen with like the little teasers and the announcement videos we've done this season, that's a lot of work that's going into it. So it kind of spoils the surprise, if you like. Yeah, transfers are always going to be leaked, if you like, by the South London press and other in-the-know types. But at the end of the day, what you've got to realise with these newspapers is they're going to have a player's agent who may say, oh, you know, can you put this out there to give it more publicity? Because that might drive another club to put in a bid for the same player. So in a way, we kind of don't always want those stories to go out there because it can attract other clubs that could steal said player from us when we're trying to sign them, you know? But yeah, for me, I'm not in too many WhatsApp groups. Obviously, some of my mates will ask me directly, but just I think they know that I can't say anything most of the time, so I don't really get too much grief about it, thankfully. And yeah, at the end of the day, it is more fun when, you know, for example, when we signed Chris Gunter, no one knew about it. There was no media reports, nothing. And then it just came out of the woodwork and everyone was obviously thrilled because we signed, at the time, Wales' most capped player. So, yeah, I just think it sometimes ruins the surprise of it, but I totally get that transfers are going to be leaked. Like before, there was maybe a time where I'd be like, oh, you know, that's frustrating that it's gone out in the newspaper and it's sort of perked everyone up and gone, oh yeah, so we're going to sign him then. But yeah, it's just part of football at the end of the day. So yeah, like I find it quite easy to keep it under wraps actually.
So when are you doing the next teaser? When's the next teaser thing coming out? Is there one out tomorrow? When's the next teaser?
I don't know. I haven't scheduled anything yet. But I've got some good stuff in mind for this month, Ed. So hopefully I'll get to use them if we sign anyone.
You see, this is another thing that we're all old enough to remember, that you used to have to phone up an 0898 number and sit and wait for about 2 minutes on club call just to get some kind of vague idea what Joe Kinnear was possibly going to hint on which Norwegian he was going to sign from a club you never ever heard of. But at least we get social media.
This is a great story though, Mark. This is the story that we have. So we 0898 1211 75. I can even remember the number that it was. So we we used to phone it up in secret from our house because it was, you know, you would just get, that would be the news you'd get. And you'd try and do it for as least as time as possible. But the intro bit was always like a minute. Hello, welcome to Wimbledon Club Call. Oh, and it would do that whole thing. And then it would do like an intro. Then it would say what was going to happen. And finally, you get to the crux of it, the bit of the news that you really wanted. And so, you know, you'd hear it. And it's like 2 minutes. 2 minutes at the least was when you get the news. And you put the phone down. Except one time I've come home and my dad's gone to me. What's this? What's this on the phone, Matt? And I'm listening to it. I say, Dad, that's Joe Kinnear talking to Paul McGee. How long has it been there? And this has been hours. So the bill was 75 quid for to hear nothing from Joe Kinnear talking.
And
to
that's 75 quid in 1993. So that's when 75 quid was worth 75 quid, you know?
Yeah.
It would have been Paul McGee. It would have been 1990. It would have been something like that. And it was me that made the phone call and it was me that had to pay it. And I think it was more than 75 quid. But yeah, whatever. There you go. 0898 1211 75.
Appreciating, Chris, you wouldn't have ever heard of who Paul McGee is. What you might have heard of is the Arsenal-Liverpool game where Arsenal had to win by two clear goals. The reason that was set up like that was because Arsenal were playing Wimbledon at Highbury and they were assumed to beat them. And Paul McGee scored with about 10 minutes left for Wimbledon. to get a two-all draw, which meant that they had to get 3 points in
from 20 or 25 yards out into the bottom corner.
True story. True story.
It was absolutely classic. It is one of the great stories. And if it wasn't for that, Nick Hornby would never have been able to write anything, because that was the story. That's how Fever Pitch got into existence. All of that, all thanks to Mighty Maggot Paul McGee. Brilliant bloke. Really
not
friendly.
Not even mentioned in the film. A huge plot line, a huge plot hole in the film. If you watch the film, it's a huge plot hole.
In fact, all Arsenal fans owe it all to Wimbledon.
Yeah, exactly.
Without us, they would be nothing.
Nothing without us.
Well, yeah. Nick Hornby's got no hair whatsoever, and in the film he's played by Colin Firth, so that's completely wrong to start with. Anyway, we digress. Mr. Thorpe, you joined as content exec in the middle of possibly our worst season in the last, I don't know, millennia. So maybe that is the answer to this question, but was that the biggest challenge? And how on earth did you manage to stay positive when basically everything was collapsing around you, football-wise?
Was it, Chris? Because we used to joke about it and just say, ever since Chris has taken over, we've lost every single game. Because until that point, we'd actually won. Was that it, Chris? Did that help?
I don't know if that helped, but I suppose it put a smile on my face now and again. But you know what? I'm kind of, what's the right way to say it? I think I'm almost over last season, if that's okay to say. I just think I just have to look forward now. I don't want to focus too much on last season. But obviously it was tough. And, you know, obviously you're always going to have that hope. Oh, you know, we're going to get the win, the first win, and then, you know, build out and sort of get out of the situation we found ourselves in. And yeah, it was difficult. And yeah, I think, to be honest, I was quite spoiled when I was younger watching Wimbledon. So obviously we rose through the non-leagues and we were winning every week. And since we got back into the Football League, it hasn't been all plain sailing. Obviously, we've had a promotion to League One, 6 years in League One, but we didn't really progress onwards up from that point. I don't know how I felt about it. Really, it was obviously really difficult. And also, again, what I said earlier, my job's to protect the players and protect the management, and that was getting maybe quite difficult the longer the winless run went on. So, yeah, it was really tough. And I also got on really well with Robbo, as a lot of people do. Everyone knows how nice a bloke he is and how much he cares about this club and still does. You know, you go to an FA Youth Cup game, he'll be there in the stands. He's always there. So, yeah, it was very difficult to see him leave. But at the same time, it's a results-based industry, isn't it? So sometimes you do have to let go of people, unfortunately. So, yeah, I'd say that was the most difficult thing, for sure.
So, Chris, you said you kind of decided to kind of forget about last season. So have I, really. I'm really enjoying the football at the moment. And you obviously talked a little bit there about the fact you felt you've been maybe a little bit spoiled with seeing Wimbledon go through the leagues. But we're down a league. But are you enjoying the football again? I think this is something that maybe some people don't realise when you get relegated. You still can enjoy the football. I mean, we saw a massive relegation at the very start of AFC Wimbledon, of course. I mean, so are you enjoying it now?
Yeah, to be honest, it sounds, you know, people think I'm crazy. I enjoyed it last season. I just enjoyed doing my job still. Obviously, there wasn't too many moments to be positive, unfortunately, but I still enjoyed it. And I still, you know, I always feel like something can happen in any game at any given moment. You know, at Colchester, when we were 1-0 down and they hit the inside of the post, did I think we were going to win? Honest answer is, well, no, not at that stage. I thought we'd go 2 down, but thankfully we didn't and we turned it around. It's, you know, those are the moments you live for, and those are the moments you go to the football for those precise moments. Today, I went to watch Kingstonian against Crickford Casuals, and Crickman Casuals didn't play that well, but they won 2-1. They scored an absolute screamer of a second goal, and that just made the whole match for me. And it's the same if I'm watching a Wimbledon game. If an amazing goal goes in or a last-minute goal gets scored, I can go, oh, what am I going to put in the headline for the match report, right? It's, if you enjoy your writing and stuff like that, you're going to enjoy every game. But yeah, no, this season's been really, really good. Obviously, the new players, not so new in the case of Harry Pell coming in. has really helped gel the group. I feel like there's a really good team spirit. You can see that with the celebrations that they have after games when they win. And I think, yeah, it's our job to make that connection between the players and the fans as well. So I'm hoping in this new year, you know, in collaboration with other people in the media team, Danny Macklin, we can put on some more events to get fans with the players and getting to know them a bit more. And also myself, I can help with that with doing content more focused on their personalities and stuff like that. So yeah, no, I'm obviously loving the games this season, but I still enjoyed them last season. Just the way it is. Love watching Wimbledon.
Yeah, no, it's cool. Yeah, it's cool. I was going to say, because on a previous podcast, Mark mentioned about that during the World Cup, which obviously many of us felt was a bit odd in different ways, and that there was lots of non-league football still going on. I happened to mention to a friend of mine who's a Sunderland fan who lives in Morpeth and said, hey, I sent him the link to the website for that team. And today he's watching them play South Shields, top of the English North Conference second or something. I can't remember what it was. And he said it was packed. They had to delay kickoff by 15 minutes, rammed, you know, and he loved it, you know, but didn't win, but just enjoyed the game. And of course, it's, you know, going to see football is going to see football, isn't it?
Adam, I'm going to pick up on two. I'm going to add to your point, and I want to ask Chris something else as well. So one of the big things in Newcastle and Sunderland at the moment is there's a load of Geordie fans that are actually, that we speak to for Fair Game. They're actually really pissed off with the way that the Saudi owners, and they're finding a bit more of a disgruntled feel about the shirt. And a load of them are starting to go watch on the alternate Saturdays. They're still, you know, it's still difficult for them to drench their way away. But that you're finding the attendances at the clubs around Newcastle in the lower leagues are all going up because they're kind of, that's where they've got their community feel. That's where they feel there's a bit of sense of belonging. And that's the kind of honest football. So that's been one of the big things that we've noticed. And we've got, like Gateshead and Darlow, are both Fair Game clubs, and they're getting their attendances are improving because of the Newcastle effect, they call it. And that's something that's really interesting. So that just adds to that point, Adam. Chris, one of the things I wanted to ask you a bit about was obviously you've been on the inside track. So it's useful to get a sense about the personalities of the players. You know, who are the jokers? Who are the kind of, what's the kind of atmosphere on a training ground? I mean, like, you know, I go to the matches, but I never go to the training grounds. So, you know, what's the kind of banter like? What's it like on a training ground? How does that actually operate? You know, there are players will trot out and go up and do the stuff. Is there any kind of like, who's the joker? What's the kind of bits that you can remember from that? That's the kind of insight I'm really interested to get a bit of sense about. You know, make these people think real to us rather than like, you know, Harry Pell, who seems to have a problem with standing up sometimes. But, you know, other issues.
So the jokers, I'd say Harry Pell, definitely. Lee Brown, Nathan Young-Coombs, Alex Pearce has got a very interesting sense of humour. Woody as well. They're sort of a little group really, because they're all around the same age, sort of the older boys. But then Nathan Young-Coombs obviously isn't old. He'll get involved in that, and then they all bounce off of each other. Really, they're always laughing and there's always laughing and joking at every training session now and again. I think you need that as well because these guys are around each other, you know, almost 24/7 for best part of what, how long's the season? Like 8-9 months, right? So they've got to enjoy themselves at some point, you know. But mainly they'll come out for training, start kicking the balls about a little bit, just get warmed up, and then they go into an actual warm up, and then they'll go into a rondo, which is where they're in the squares. You'll have seen in the clips that I put up. They go in the squares, which is basically a possession drill. Two players will be in the middle. Once they intercept the ball, then they've got to swap with the person in the middle, give them the bib, blah, blah, blah. And then depending on the day, so if it's one day before the match, that's called what they call match day minus one. So that'll be a lot more tactical stuff, working on set pieces, stuff like that. But it won't be as intense as sessions earlier on in the week because they don't want to put too much, they call it load in the medical department. They don't want to put too much load on the players' bodies. Don't want to put them under too much strain because obviously they're going to be playing most of them 90 minutes. So they want to keep them in peak condition. They also utilised a gym in Wimbledon. It's called the Fit Partnership. It's one of our sponsors. they're part of the Wimbledon Business Club. So we have that link with them, and they've got a cryo chamber there, which is basically like an ice chamber. You go in there for like 3 minutes and it cleanses your body of all sorts. You know, I'm not a medical professional, but I've actually been in it myself, and it's crazy. So you're in there, it's like minus 180 degrees. You're in there for 2 to 3 minutes, and then you step outside, and then the heat just comes rushing back to your body. So that they do that, and then they also have other things that they do to help with their recovery. So yeah, they're really busy, to be honest. And even after they've done the session itself, they'll have lunch, and then some of them will be in the gym. Some of them will have one-to-one training that they do off-site as well. So they're always active. So yeah, I'm not surprised that they like to let their hair down and have a laugh. And yeah, the guys I mentioned, full of banter, but all of them can have a laugh, to be honest. They're just a really great group, and it's always a good feeling when you go down there and you feel like you enjoy coming to work. I know Johnny said it in interviews recently that everyone's enjoying coming to work, because obviously A, we're doing well, and B, you know, why would you want to work somewhere that you don't enjoy going into, you know?
I love the idea of putting our players into cryostasis. I think if we could just, I mean, I like the idea that maybe in like the end of the season, they just all go in that, and then we thaw them out in like, you know, the end of July, August, just in time for pre-season. And now I'm assuming that's what happened to our Sal. He's just got locked in. He's locked in, and we're slowly defrosting him.
Like Han Solo. Yeah.
Exactly.
So now what I'm thinking about is, why the hell didn't we think about doing that with Robbie Earle? Just kept him in that and brought him out now, and we would have been brilliant, kind of extra midfield genius that we needed right now. Yeah, I mean, perfect.
Yeah, technology wasn't around in those days, no. That's why. So you've got to move with the times.
So perhaps over the summer we pick out all our, like, you know, good talented players, yeah. Just freeze them,
yeah,
and keep them all somewhere safe.
He wants Rob Earthel back. That's what it is, really.
Rob Earthel.
I'm now thinking that I want Chris to task someone to do a Photoshop job of a Sal looking like Han Solo. Do you know what I mean?
That's who he was. That's who he's kept in. That'll be the new Twitter feed for tomorrow. We'll have that sorted.
Good shout. All right, I'm going to move us on. We could ask Chris loads of questions, but we'll let him breathe a little bit. Although, feel free to join in as a fan in this bit, Chris. You might not be allowed to, but you know. Hopes and fears for the transfer window. We're like 48 hours or so in, as we record today, 2nd of January. Sutton already showed us, with a couple of injuries and a couple of unavailable players. Obviously, McGomes is out for a little bit. There is a lack of strength and depth in the squad, especially on the wings. Chittle has been playing amazingly, but hasn't really got anyone to back him up. You know, Senior wasn't a short-term deal. Don't know whether he's actually still around or going to stay around, or whether we want to stay him around. Likewise, Hudlin, would he go back? Do we want him to stay anyway? Maybe we've missed out on a few targets already. Forster Caskey was talked about quite a lot, but it now looks like, if you were reading on the South London Press today, that he's on his way to Stevenage, which could be quite tasty for them. And allegedly, we're also in for the winger that has just re-signed online for Sutton, whose name I cannot pronounce. So are we a little concerned? Do we think there's some real potential in there? Do we have any money anyway? What do we think?
Well, I think Hudlin, you know, he's worked his way back into the side, but probably that's to do with injuries and, you know, unavailabilities of players. I'm guessing he goes back. And then it starts looking around. I mean, it's obvious that we need at least one other person up front. We need someone else. We need to be able to change that around. And maybe someone else who can play across the wings. But I'm not sure how many do you think we need? I mean, I'd be happy with one or two. I guess I'd be happy with a couple.
So I'm kind of with Matt. I also feel really sorry for Chris in this, because he obviously can't say anything about any of this at all, right? Because we can at this point like just speculate and say what we think about players and all the rest of it. And totally, for Chris Constant thing. I think Hudlin needs to go back. I think we definitely need a backup for Davison. Because I think up front we just need that. We need a chance to rest them. Right. And at the moment you kind of think you couldn't really rest some of those players up front because we need them all. So that's where I feel a little bit. I feel we probably could do with somebody to back up on the wings. you know, and you look at it, are we fully, what happens when Curry and Billa, you know, I'm just a little bit concerned about the fullbacks, but I think my first target would be a winger and a backup centre forward is where I think we're at. Also, you know, do we need somebody else beyond Woodyard, Pell and Marsh? Maybe the centre, I don't know. But then I think also it's about how much money we've got. And also, and the other fear we have to do is there's going to be bids for a sale. It's like, you know, how much can we resist? And that's a really hard one. Because, you know, there's going to be a tipping point, isn't there, with the sale. What do we say is a decent amount to get in for him? You know, I mean, obviously Messi in exchange, fine. But, like, you know, other than that.
Isn't Ronaldo still not with a club? Is that right?
I'm not having Cristiano Ronaldo. He's complete twazzer.
No, it's funny. I mean, I think I probably agree with these guys generally, but I think it's quite funny. Throughout the podcast, I've basically said, we need defenders. Then I've gone, now we need midfielders. Now I'm like, actually, we need attackers. So it's a good job. I have got nothing to do with player selection ever, thankfully. But yeah, I think we're just missing attacking. Yeah, the Sutton game, we really saw that. We just didn't have any attacking force on the bench to bring on. And it was a bit weird, you know, a bit of a sort of swap around. Davison, I think, has looked tired, not necessarily the last game, but certainly in a couple of games I've managed to really watch him. So I am a little bit concerned about that. Pell might get sent off at some point, probably. You know, it's like, it'd be good to get a couple of, I would say, yeah, a couple of strikers, maybe a midfielder. Yeah, I like Belair a lot, as everyone knows now. He has definitely become my favourite player instantly. So, I don't see any need for anyone to come in and take his spot at any time soon.
I was just going to say, without any means of sounding arrogant at all, we've played everyone in League Two now except Stevenage. And with the exception of a couple of teams and Barrow were one of them and they've fallen off, I really don't think we've necessarily seen a huge amount of quality. Sutton obviously found a way of beating us, which is frustrating, but did they do it through huge amounts of quality? Not as far as I'm concerned. So we need more bodies. We need more physical bodies. And it's an attritional thing. We've only played 23, 24 games. We've got another 23, 24 games left to play, although we're not in any more cups. But yeah, we need players on the wings. We need to be in a situation where Johnny doesn't look at his bench and actually think, you know what? I have to leave these players on for 75, 80 minutes because I'm really not confident that necessarily whoever's on the bench is going to be able to change things very much. That's happened too much. I think it's unfair to criticise a manager who hasn't necessarily got more than 14 or 15 first team players he's particularly confident in playing. I mean, if any of us were asked at the beginning of the season who would be our first choice defence, and we'd come up with Hussein Bila, Riley Towler, PK and Jack Curry, then we would have laughed because Curry made his debut this season. So did Biller. No one had heard of Towler before we signed him on loan, ever, anywhere. And he only ever played in non-league. And obviously PK's been in and out. So I'm amazed he's managed 100 performances, frankly. But yeah, that defence has done us really proud. But likewise, you have got Brown and Pierce and Nightingale and Gunter to be able to supplement them. But Niall's right. We haven't got huge amount to supplement central midfield. I think Marsh, unfortunately, has been disappointing when he's had the chance. But it's up front that we need them, left and right. I think Senior had an opportunity, got a very, very fluky goal. But apart from that, unfortunately, hasn't really set the world on fire. And left midfield, as we saw with the sale not being available yesterday against Sutton, left midfield, we don't have a huge amount of option, if any, right now. So that's where I'd be looking at left midfield and some kind of lump to supplement Davison and give him a chance to have a rest.
I was just going to say, I don't understand why everyone seems to hate Kyle Hudlin. And I don't understand that. And the reason why I don't understand that is because he started 6 games a season. And in the 6 games he started, he scored 4 goals. So 2 of which were against the League One leaders. I know it was in the Papa John's, all 4 goals were in the Papa John's trophy, but they still count for something. So yeah, I don't really agree with the views that people have on Hudlin, really.
Yeah, that's a fair shout, Chris. I think realistically, Hudlin's not being viewed as a striker that played non-league football last year, which is what he is. he's been viewed as a striker that supposedly is a Huddersfield player and therefore should be on the fringes of a squad capable of playing championship football. The reality is they bought him as championship clubs can usually afford to do in a way in which League One and League Two clubs cannot afford to do. They bought Huddlin, you would imagine, as an investment for the future. So maybe he would have had a few minutes by Christmas, or maybe he would have come into the team later on in the season. As it turns out, with the season they've had, which is pretty unprecedented from their perspective, because they were pushing for playoffs last year and now they're fighting to actually stay up. They haven't necessarily got, you know, made big tracks at all. So is Huddlin the right kind of player to bring in? I don't know. Maybe they'll have to, because they won't necessarily have the resources either. It surprised me, and actually pleasantly surprised me, that Radoni's gone in there and got his place in the team, held his place in the team, and even in a struggling team, has done really well. And I'm really happy for him from a personal point of view and from obviously career development point of view, because even if Huddersfield don't do so well, then who knows what that may mean for his career, and obviously that may mean something for us financially from a SLM point of view. But Huddlin isn't a championship striker. We don't know what level he'll actually come to. Is he good enough to play for us? Yes, possibly. Have we found the right position to play him in? Not sure. But the sad thing, probably, to answer Chris's question is, if you're comparing like for like between Huddlin and Davidson, then Davidson obviously comes up much higher. But they're not the same kind of player. So that's not really a fair thing to do. What I'm also frustrated about is I haven't had the opportunity to stand next to him because I am taller than him by 1 inch.
No, you're 6'8 and he's 6'9.
No, he's 6'7. Isn't he? I don't know.
6'9.
Ah, okay. Well, he's 1 inch taller than me then.
Face, Mark Lewis.
Well, if he is hanging around, you've got to get in there quick, mate, and do a back to back. And just to confirm. But you know, as you get older, and I'm not saying anything, Mark, you start to shrink. So that's where you could lose, maybe.
Chris, this is one I want on Twitter, right? I want a back-to-back Mark Lewis and Carl Huddlin, so we can start calling him Small Mark instead of Tall Mark.
Sounds good. Let's get it done.
When we say getting older, we're talking over the age of 30, all right? So at least 4 out of 5 people here qualify for that. Whippersnapper Thorpe, that never even saw us play at Selhurst. Mm-hmm. Lucky man.
Going back to your earlier point, Mark, about Asel and selling him, I really hope we don't. I hope we keep him to the summer, because I mean that's my big hope. And I would be looking at a million, and some sort of you know, buy on clause, because I just think he really is that good. There's something about him which, in theory, I mean, if you look at it, he should be our player of the year. He should be our player of the year when it comes to vote. He probably won't be. Because his personality doesn't shine through necessarily on or connect with us on the pitch.
Who does? Which personality? So the only one you said personality-wise, looking on the pitch, is Harry Pell, who's got a personality and a half, right?
I'd probably still vote
Sal. I mean, Harry Pell is the type of player that I love as a fan, as a Wimbledon fan, but I know that as an opposing fan, I would think would be the most worst, horrible, hated player you'd ever play against. You know, you can tell that. He reminds me of Paul Stewart when Paul Stewart has played for Spurs. I hated him with a passion because he was a grumpy chin.
He does my head in, to be honest. He does my head in, but okay.
You're too pure, Adam. You're a very pure man. You're a very pure person. You need to get your inner Vinnie Jones. Come on, Harry Pell. Mark.
Read what the Colchester fans said online about Pell after the game the other night. They loved him when he was there because he played for them, and now they miss the fact that he doesn't play for them, and they think they don't have anyone of that ilk. If Chris actually does listen back, or did listen back, he might know that with no prior knowledge whatsoever, when we were talking about the last bit of the transfer window in August, when we first started the pod, and we said, what kind of player should we sign? What did I say? I believe I said the type of player we should sign is a Harry Pell style player. So there.
Yeah, whatever. What's Chris, what's Harry Pell like on the training ground? What's he like? What's him in particular, what is the real Harry Bell?
Walking swear jar. he swears every, I mean, it's always when he's playing football as well, he seems to swear every other word he says, so it's kind of hard when I'm recording training. I'll have to put, you might have heard the one I done recently, the clip that I put up, I actually bleeped his swear words out with a foghorn just to add a bit of comedy value, but that aside, he's, you know, he was captain at Colchester. He was a big character at Accrington Stanley. And you know, I said to him when he re-signed for us, I said, oh, you know, I used to love you when you played for us the first time. And I remember when we signed him in January of that season, hardly brought him in. And he made a real difference because he, as Mark says, he is, you know, I really want to say, are we allowed to swear on it? He's a shithouse, isn't he? You don't want to play against him. But equally, you know, you'd love to have him on your team. I'll just say he adds something different. You don't get many midfield players who are 6'4", can score goals, can defend, can win you free kicks, can wind up the opposition. He's got a bit of everything really as well. And plus, he'd say this himself, he's grown up since he left us. He's been through a lot of experiences. He's obviously an Essex boy, but he's been up to Accrington. He's been at Colchester. He's been at Cheltenham as well. So he's been around. He's been around. And he knows this division like the back of his hand. He's had success in his career before in terms of promotions. So I think he's just like the ideal signing for us, really. But yeah, on the training ground, put it this way, you know, he's never quiet. he's always boisterous.
Okay, I'm going to wrap it up there, darlings. And before we go, we're just going to do a little bit of our silly some numbers quiz. You ever heard this, Chris? Yeah, are you familiar with what we're talking about here? It's a random number, and I give you a random number, and you've got to give us the answer. But the random number always is connected to something relating to AFC Wimbledon, and usually this season as well. These are all this season, actually.
Okay.
Adam never gets any.
They're usually completely random and relate to all sorts of things. Sometimes not even related to football. So
no. These ones are all football. Don't start giving us that.
Mark, I mean, it's all over the place. Now, Chris, you're obviously a convert. You'll be listening to this all the time.
What Mark doesn't know is I'm preparing for next season. You know, like those boards you see that serial killers have in their den? Right, I'm going to have that with all the data of all the games that Wimbledon have played just so I can answer one of these damn questions one week.
Matt, you recently watching Serial Killer documentary on it's the series that obviously Adam has got specially subscribed because, like, frankly, I do not know what Adam's remotely talking about. He's gone like, you know, I'm now slightly concerned about what if you turn the camera around, what's on the other wall where Adam's looking on his serial killers. So if you are a constabulary looking for a serial killer anywhere in the local, whatever. Anyway, Chris, obviously, as you've been like in the heart of the club, we're assuming that you can adjudicate on all of these and get them all right.
Yeah.
So whatever we say.
Jump in when no one else knows the answer, Chris. We'll start with Chris. Chris's number is 11.
Yeah.
The answer is 11. What's the question?
The amount of players. How many players start a Wimbledon match?
Yeah, that's a Niall Cooper type answer. No, they're all fairly straightforward. They're not that straightforward.
Is it in the number of games we would have been unbeaten had we not lost?
Stop getting obsessed with goals we concede after the 80th minute. No, it's not.
Is it
the number of away fans at Plymouth?
No, that was 56. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I should have used that one, actually. But
oh, man, this is... Go on, Adam, you must know this.
Yeah, how many... It's not the number of miles to Sutton, is it?
That's less than that. It's about 3 miles, isn't it?
That's true.
We have a hint. Any
sort of... a hint. Okay. Well, most of these you'll get, but there'll be at least one of these in this group that you'll almost certainly not get, but I suspect Chris Thorpe will get.
Is it the amount of goal scorers we've had this season?
Correct!
Yes!
Now, Mr. Clever Clogs, you can name all 11.
Carl Hudlin, Josh Davison, Ibisal, Ethan Chislett, Paul Callenby, Riley Towler, Jack Curry, Harry Pell. Well, it's going to be really bad. Courtney Senior. Oh, two more. Kwaku Frimpong. And one more. Oh, God, who is it? I really don't want to forget them.
Is everybody else like already seriously impressed by this?
I think I know which one it is.
Chris, we can't even name the starting 11. We can't even list the starting 11.
This is why I gave this one to Chris, you know.
Oh my God. How can I not remember?
Is it Paris?
No, he hasn't scored. Nah, I give up. I can't remember who it was. Generally can't remember.
Anyone else?
Come on.
I think it's Nathan. I think the one he hasn't named is Nathan.
Oh, Young Coombs. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Oh. Very Chris, good, if you want to say Nathan Young Coombs now, I can edit it so you get all 11 right.
No. That's not allowed. Right, cheeky Mr. Adam, your number is 10.
10? Oh, for goodness. Why do you even ask? 10. 10 games we've not beaten.
No, it's closely connected to the last answer.
10 clearances off the line by Towler.
Is it 10 clean sheets this season?
No.
10 assists by a Sal?
Not 10 assists, no.
10 goals by a Sal.
10 goals by a Sal, very good. Top scorer, Ivan Sal, 10 goals.
He's already equaled his tally, the whole tally he had last season, which is that's how well he's doing this season.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's very good. Okay.
Don't go.
Matt's number is 7,223.
Oh, please, can this be our average attendance up until this point?
Correct! You see, easy!
That's because it was easy.
Very good. I do try and be nice to them. And finishing off with Niall, 1,400.
That is the amount of away fans we took to Sutton.
Yes, it is. You see? And you lot claim that I'm horrible about this and make it really, really difficult. You are fabulous. We've been waffling on for ages and ages and ages. So I'd just like to say a massive thank you to Chris Thorpe for coming on and answering such wonderfully and clearly and concisely and helpfully. And please come on any other time, especially with some transfer gossip.
I
know you're not allowed to, don't worry.
We're just getting started, aren't we? I mean, it's going to be an interesting month ahead, that's for sure. I'm sure I'm going to be busy at some stages rather than others, but we'll just have to see what comes.
Fingers crossed, busy before the 31st of January.
Yeah. Who thinks Chris has passed Diplomacy 101 today? I really think he's done a
Oh, absolutely, job. Yeah. He's been reading from the What I'm Not Allowed to Say playbook. Well done, Chris.
No, he's done brilliant. I like the bit where he named all the players and asking him whether they were going or not. And he just winked when he knew the ones. Because it's all videoed, only us know who's going. So it's fantastic. Oh, yeah. You did well there, Chris.
Edit that bit out. Thank you to Adam. Thank you to Noah. Thank you to Matt. Thank you especially to Chris. Good luck with the crazy away games up at Crewe with the same old Wombles. And that's episode 19. We'll see you next week. Thank you. Good night.
And now, Chris, you can tell us about the transfer window.